Welcome to our podcast, Pas de Garçon.
That is a French phrase meaning no boys, which is perfect for our podcast because we are going to be talking about women in literature. But first, let me introduce my lovely partner in literary crime. This is Ananya. She is 20 years old, but turns 21 in August. She's a Virgo sign, but she's not grounded like the majority of Earth signs because of the moon and ascendant correlated to her birthday. She has two cats that are both named Meow, and she eats an inordinate amount of pokey every week.
And this is Polly. She's 21 and lives in Los Angeles. She has a one-eyed blind cat who was a former grand champion named Mr. Kitty. She has performed in an all-female comedy improv group called 320.
And we're each going to read a story we have written about women on the night before their marriage. My story will concern an American woman living in Virginia.
And my story will concern an Indian woman living in Delhi, which is the capital of India. We chose this prompt because we wanted to examine how culture impacts women's notions of the same gendered institution. That is marriage viewed similarly across cultures?
Yeah, so I decided to set my story in the South because I have family members who were born and raised there, and I hoped it'd make an interesting comparison. And because I have been exposed to a Southern accent all my life, and I have studied accents and dialects, I will be reading my first-person story in a Southern accent. So without further ado, here's my story. Lynchburg, Virginia, May 11th, 2018. Daddy, would you look at that? The devil is beating his wife. Daddy peers out the window in the den to watch the rain fall on this otherwise sunny day. It better not rain tomorrow. I wanted to take photos at Ivy Creek Park after the church service. My daddy chuckles. Does that mean you ain't gonna get married? I hit him on the shoulder as I sit back down in the rocking chair. Daddy, Brian is gonna be your son-in-law starting tomorrow. I'd appreciate it if you start treating him like family. Dang it, Roy! My mama shouts from the kitchen. Don't be causing trouble. She calls us in for dinner in the dining room. After we pray to the Lord to bless him for the fine feast in front of us, my mama puts her hand on my shoulder. Darling, I am so happy you and Brian waited. You've earned the right to wear white on your wedding day. Mama, I squirm and bury my head in the big bowl of cheese grits and ham in front of me. Scarlet, Brian's the only guy this girl's ever dated. My mama takes the salt shaker away from Daddy as punishment for his insensitive comment. And do you wish I went to fashion school in New York so I didn't marry the only boy I ever dated? No, darling, it's just, ain't no one good enough for my Carol Ann. Mama goes on about how 24 is the perfect age to get married. 2 years after college, 1 year after I finished my teacher certificate, and 6 months after I started teaching fourth grade at Robert S. Payne Elementary School. I stare up at the family portraits above the mantel. Grandma wears a scowl on her face, while Grandpa has a twinkle in his eye. Soon, Daddy clears the plates and Mama brings out a pecan pie for dessert. As I take my first bite and savor the sickeningly sweet taste of my favorite dessert, Mama says, Carol Ann, we have something for you. Daddy brings out a wicker basket with four wrapped presents. The first is something old. I smile as I hold a sterling silver iced teaspoon. The heirloom is engraved with the initial L for my great-great-grandma. Something new. I laugh as I open an electric skillet. There's a post-it note in my daddy's handwriting that reads, perfect for making hush puppies. My something borrowed is Mama's pearls, and my something blue is a sapphire bracelet. It's not too late to back out, Daddy warns. I expect Mama to chastise him, but her expression is serious. How are you really feeling about tomorrow? She asks. I take another bite of my pecan pie. Fair to middling? Daddy asks. I'm ready to do the damn thing.
That was incredible.
Thank you. You really have
a knack for voices. So I can't really vouch for the accuracy of my accents, but about the facts, I did attend a few Indian weddings in my childhood, and I did a lot of research, so I hope my facts are pretty accurate. Mine's entitled Delhi, India, May 11, 2018. Sakshi sat facing the mirror, her bangs tucked away with safety pins the color of soot and her hair parted in the middle. Though she'd resolved not to wear it this way ever again, she quite looked forward to having the emptiness of her parting filled with the rich red of sindoor, which would mark her apart from the unwed women. The women in her family, which included all her aunts, female cousins, and extended female relatives, were all in the room as she made last-minute adjustments to her appearance by adding more kajal around the eyes and changing the earrings. While the rest of the women crowded around the window, hoping to catch a glimpse of the groom's procession, Sakshi's mother lingered by her side. Given that Sakshi was her only child, her mother was very protective of her and had all but hoped that Sakshi would remain unwed forever. When she had started working as a professor at Delhi University, her mother had been certain that no one would want to marry her daughter since most of the men in their strata liked their wives to be better or worse with the economics of running a household than the economics of poverty in South Asia. Even when Sakshi had moved in with her boyfriend and soon-to-be husband, her mother had been convinced that marriage was not on the cards for her daughter. After all, everyone knew that moving in together was a recipe for disaster and culminated in messy breakups, not nuptials. "I nursed you and raised you for more than 20 years, and for what?" Her mother wiped away tears with the gold-embroidered end of her sari, "only to bid goodbye to you." Sakshi wanted to point out that she hadn't lived with her parents since she moved out 5 years ago and would only live an hour away after being wed, but she knew that's not what her mother was referring to. Though she didn't view her marriage as a transfer of property, she knew that's how the institution was constructed. In society's eyes, Sakshi would no longer be the representative of her parents' household, but would now represent the honor and prosperity of her husband's household. The sound of loud Hindi music emanated from the street, indicating the groom's family's arrival, and interrupted her musings on the social construct of marriage. Sakshi couldn't see the street from her seat by the dresser, but she could sense the merriment from the cheers of the groom's procession. As the women rushed down to join in the ritualistic games the family engaged in to jokingly prevent the groom from entering their household, Sakshi thought of the inevitable moment of union, when she and her soon-to-be husband would take 7 steps around the fire and officially be married. Of course, there was another day of celebrating before that could happen, since today was only day 2 of 3. But Sakshi, for one, couldn't wait to get it all over with.
That was amazing. I love that. What inspired you to write this story?
The prompt.
The prompt, but you thought of the prompt.
I know, I think, well, in all honesty, I probably wouldn't have written the story if it wasn't for the prompt, just because marriage isn't something that I spend a lot of time thinking about, especially not Indian marriages, because I haven't been exposed to a lot of them, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting to look at the similarities between our stories, because we both had one parent almost neglecting the marriage, rejecting it.
I think we both had a similar figure that didn't think the groom or was good enough for their daughter, or didn't want the marriage to happen necessarily.
Yeah, but I think definitely in my American story, it was much more implicit the way that the woman's duty would shift. Because yours was explicit in one of your lives.
Right. I think it's just the way marriage is constructed in India is much more economic, or there's definitely a shift that everyone's aware of.
Yeah, definitely.
The parents would be very tearful and they realize that they're giving away something.
Yeah, and we both dwelt upon the specific age or the ideal age of marriage. Well, I also had some fun questions for you. What is the book you wish more people appreciated?
As a kid, I read a lot of kid classics, so definitely more of those. I personally really loved Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, yeah.
And I wish more, I wish that was taught everywhere.
What is the classic novel you have not actually read?
So many. I went to a British school, so I haven't read a lot of great American authors. I've never read Fitzgerald or Steinbeck, and just a lot of classic American authors.
Who is the fictional heroine you would want to be friends with in real life?
Probably also Anne of Green Gables. Like, I just think we have so much in common. Like, I hated my chin growing up. I didn't like my nose. I hated geometry. Like, we just have everything in common.
She's your spirit animal.
Yes.
I love that. I really like Jane and Jane Eyre.
Oh.
She's my woman.
I feel like, would she make a good friend?
No. Well, I mean, after her friendship with Helen.
Right, but that ended so tragically.
Only because she died. Right. She would have stuck around. They would have been long friends. I don't know. Yeah. I'd like to step in and be her and be her sidekick. And now for our own segment, we're going to make some rules to expand the Bechdel test.
So essentially, the Bechdel test only has one criteria, and that's supposed to measure female representation in media. And the criteria is that two women need to have a conversation about something unrelated to men, which sounds impossible, right? But there are a lot of movies that apparently fail this test.
And even some movies that pass the Bechdel test don't actually focus on women. For example, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1, the movie, passes the test, but it is such Harry Potter's narrative that we wanted to make some rules to further women's narratives. And one rule that I suggest is that the two women who are talking, which is part of the Bechdel test, have a conversation that does not revolve solely around their children. Because I think so often in movies and in books, it's how are you, but really how's the kids?
Right. I think also adding something to do with female presence behind the scenes, like also measuring how many women are involved, not just with directing or the big roles, but also how many women are involved in the smaller things like lights, cinematography, all of that stuff.
I think that's a great rule.
Yeah, I think I read something about how a lot of movies that did pass the test did not have any women involved. And that was like 50 plus movies, which is awful.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us.